Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, the Insightful Players Series. Coach Carew doing tremendous, tremendous things with Insightful Player. And Insightful Player is partnered with NFL players who are great role models to empower youth. The NFL players are featured in the book with even more stories at InsightfulPlayer.com. You can purchase the book. And they also offer valuable education programs, including school assemblies. So remember to go to InsightfulPlayer.com. And I'm really excited to welcome the program, former NFL player, Insightful Player, Danny Clark. Danny, thanks for calling.
Oh, man, I'm glad to be here, my friend. You know, I appreciate you having me out here today.
Oh, absolutely, Danny. And again, as I looked at your career and specifically enough, being in the NFL for so many years, it must be really an honor in so many ways to last that long in this sport, because a lot of times the career in the NFL is a very short career, but you're able to stay on for a long time and play at a very good level.
Yeah, you know, the NFL is surprisingly called, and it stands for not for long. And so the career span usually is about 3 to 4 years. And I was blessed to be drafted in the 7th round, where usually those guys don't make it past training camp. So I made that first training camp, and I had the opportunity to play 11 seasons throughout 12 years, which was truly a blessing, far beyond what I had expected on my own merit.
Yeah, definitely. And in a lot of ways, we see these things and we say, wow. And so one of the questions I want to kind of delve into, for our listeners are probably wondering, did you always want to be an NFL player, Danny?
Oh, it's so funny. I started playing football at about 8 years old, and my dad has a video, which I have at my home today. My dad gave it to me for my 30th birthday, and it was a video. I was holding the baseball bat, and my dad says, "Hey, what would you like to be, young man, when you grow up?" And I'm holding a baseball bat, and I says, "Well, I like baseball, but I want to grow up to be a football player." And my dad put that on the video. It broke me down to tears when I saw it. I saw it when I was 30, and I did it when I was about 8 years old. So, needless to say, I've dreamt of being it, but it was such a pipe dream. And I can even dive into the further discussion about my path, you know, getting into the NFL.
Oh, absolutely. I have 1,000 questions for Danny, and really just interesting things in our listeners, because I interview so many professional athletes and so many people that have reached the highest level in their profession, and the story's quite interesting, but you're one of the first, honestly. I've asked many sports athletes or even entertainers, did you want to be this when you grew up? So you reached your childhood dream, and I think that a lot of it, you can definitely look to your family as one of the reasons why you were able to make it, right? They were very supportive growing up.
Absolutely. I was raised by my dad. He got custody of me at age 2. And my mom is an integral part of us both. She felt that my dad was a better facilitator in raising a young boy to a man. And they both agreed to let me, you know, come up under my dad. And, you know, he didn't force football on me. We were just playing catch in the front yard. And I did not think that football was a contact sport because it's on a catch, you know. So, so believe it or not, I had no idea what it took as far as academics and discipline to be able to play the game of football. And my dad always held a carrot in front of me. He realized once football passed his mind and he knew it was my turn, and he would dangle it out there like a carrot, so to speak, and use it to get all my other things accomplished, which were more important, which is education. You know, I couldn't get below a C in grade school, junior high or high school. And so if you got a C, you couldn't go play that football, that carrot that you're looking for. And so I think my dad did a great job of keeping me focused on what my aspirations were, but he knew that that was not it, and that was not the end game, or once you reach that goal, that is, you know, you hit the top of the food chain. And I think that, you know, my dad just really did a good job of keeping me, you know, focused on my academics first. by the through the way of football.
And Danny, when you're talking about again your father and the great role model that he was, you're right. He didn't look at, okay, football is the end all be all. He's not being to this point where my meal ticket's Danny Clark. My son Danny's going to be the person. And we hear about these horror stories of parents who just push their kids into the... And it looks like that he looked at the well-rounded individual that you are and the well-spoken individual that you are, Danny, and you have to be commended for that, for sure. And looking at, specifically enough, the process of just looking at the importance of academics. Tell us a little bit about your father. Your father's background, is that one of the reasons why, specifically enough, academics were important in your life?
Well, it's funny. My dad is one of five children. He's the third oldest, so he's a middle child. And, you know, he's born in Memphis, Tennessee, came to Chicago, Illinois when he was 2 years old. And basically, he was raised by a single mom. His dad died when he was 7 years old. Daniel Clark, the second, which my dad is the third, and I am the fourth. So we have a lineage of names going on. Of course, I have a Daniel Clark Smith, so we've kept his name going. But my dad just was a guy that he wanted to be different than what he saw around him. And I can truly appreciate him. You know, he didn't live in the most clean neighborhoods and the greatest area, so he wanted to get us out of the neighborhoods and get us the best education possible and find whatever my child's passion was, and that was a big deal. It's very relative to today. Today, I'm in a place where I'm transitioning from playing football to going into the real world, so to speak. And he basically wanted to find out what drives a person. And once he finds that, you use that to the best of your ability as a motivator, as inspiration, something that can propel that child into a higher platform. And I think that's what my dad did. Is he basically felt that there was a need to get me above and beyond anything that he's reached, any goal that he's attained. He would like to see his child do that, and I commend him for that.
And I think that's the process, Danny, that a lot of times people who have grown into poverty and aren't able to get out are because of expectations. You can't get out of there. You can't be successful in life. And kids are told that all the time. They're told, you know what, forget about it. You are stuck here. You're always going to be in this place. And then there are parents that truly will struggle, will truly put their kids first in their lives to make sure that they have those higher expectations. That seems like your father, as I read a little bit about, he believed that C's are unacceptable. I think that really spoke to you, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It kept it. You know, it's all standards and what your expectations. With my children now, my daughter, she's a fourth grade. She's a straight A student. When she gets B's, we are a bit disappointed. And it's not because we are sticklers or strict on her, but she's shown us that she can be a straight A student quarter after quarter. So when you have some or a letdown in a class, I feel like that's something that we have to work on. We have to go and tune that particular grade up or whatever. And I think that it's expectations, and now she gets disappointed when she doesn't get straight A's. And now it's a thing that is expected now. And then so it goes on, and it carries over to junior high and high school, and even when you get to college. And when you get that first B and that first C, which is tougher. I had to go through that when I got to college, that, you know, you can't, you might have to get a C in college at the University of Illinois. So at the end of the day, I think that always has stuck with me, and it carried over into me parenting my children and letting them know that C's aren't acceptable. And you use that as again, motivation to find out what their passions are, whether it's ballet or dance.
Yes.
You know, I want to make sure that I keep waving that carrot in front of those children.
And I think that's so important to look at passion. And one of the things I want to do, Danny, it's kind of came to me yesterday in specific ways, is I'm a former teacher who is a tutoring consultant. And I said to myself, you know what? so many times I think that people are not getting that advice. Yeah, they get the great grades, but where am I going next? They have the right talent, but who's going to help them get to that next level? Because a lot of times you got to be the right place, right time. And in the NFL, right, that's that way. College football, you got to have those role models that get you that opportunity. So if we can be that opportunity for somebody, boy, and I think when we talk about that second segment, we're going to find out that's Danny Clark's mission for sure.
Absolutely. I think that once you get to be able to inspire a group of children, I mean, and it's all, you know, that's the future, of course, and we understand that. And our objective, and my objective as an individual, is basically to inspire others to inspire others. So if that makes any sense, I aspire to inspire. And I will want to show a group of children, like, once you give them a gift, whether you give them toys for Christmas or you take them on a shopping spree for their birthday, whatever it is, I just want kids to always understand that when someone does something nice for you, it's not just giving you that gift that you were able to hold, that tangible thing. It's more so of teaching you the opportunity of giving something to someone without even actually knowing them. That's the way, you know, and I'm a man of faith, so I know that, you know, my Savior did the same for us. He didn't know us, but he definitely gave a lot, a ton for us. And so I live with that premise at the center of my soul, and I think that sharing that with other people would only change their lives for the better.
And that's so, so true. And we're talking to Danny Clark, insightful player, former NFL player, played many different teams in the NFL, a great career, a long career. Let's go specifically enough, Danny, to football. You always wanted to be a professional football player. It's a dream, and a lot of kids never can reach that dream, and you were able to. When did you see in high school specifically that, hey, I'm going to be able to play in the college level? When did you finally, was it a certain coach that told you that this is an opportunity? Because your father's really focusing on academics, but tell us that story.
It's so weird. My sophomore year, I started the first three games on the sophomore football team, and we played pretty good. We were 3-0, and I had a breakout game against the school called Crete Moniz. And I had like three touchdowns. I was a quarterback and linebacker, so I threw two touchdowns, ran for one. And I played linebacker, which is not the proper mix of any – if you know any high school quarterback – most high school coaches do not let their quarterback play linebacker. Well, needless to say, we only had 28 people on our team, so everybody had to play both ways. And I was the most physical guy. So needless to say, you know, I was blessed to play really well those first three games, and I was brought up to varsity, to the varsity team after that third game. You know, he's turned up down there. Let him play the field and see what he can do, you know. And I played pretty well. I had no idea. I thought God put me together in such an awkward way. Like, my feet went out, I was bow-legged, my arms were kind of skinny. I was super skinny. I was 175 pounds, you know, going into my year. So I received a letter from the University of Tennessee as a sophomore, and I was like, man, I have an opportunity to go to college, that'd be a big deal. But junior year, I was a standout all-state player in senior year. But junior year, I did not understand that how I had the ability to play linebacker. I thought I'd be a quarterback. Everyone knew me for quarterback, but we know how small that window is at the college level. So
yeah,
I had no idea that I was going to play big-time football on any level for that matter. I thought maybe a D2 or D3 school.
So once Division I schools started looking at you, it must have been like, wow. And was it a hard choice to choose your university, or did it choose you?
yeah, it was so funny. It chose me all the way. There was a passing camp down at the University of Illinois in Champaign between my junior and senior year. I took a couple of my guys, my receivers, a couple of running backs, and we drove down there and this 7-on-7 passing league at the university. And at the university, the head coach, Lou Tepper, one of my referees was the great Simeon Rice from Illinois, of course, and they offered me a scholarship at that passing camp. right after my junior year, basically said, if you promise not to take any other visits to any school and you verbally commit to Illinois, then we'll offer you a scholarship. And I was like, I could not believe it. I was blown away. The scholarship I ever got, the only scholarship I ever got. And I never took any other visits. Oh, my only visit was to Illinois. And so I stayed in state. And that was not the school that I dreamt of going to. But, I dreamt of going to Michigan, which was another big, Big Ten school. And, one of our big schools. But that situation didn't work out for a couple different reasons.
All right, when we get back, more with Danny Clark, we're going to really delve into specifically his career at Illinois, any of the difficulties, especially academics, life on campus, leading to the NFL, and then life after football. Much to go with Danny Clark. You're listening to the Total Education Celebrity Show, powered by the Insightful Player Series. Again, go to insightfulplayer.com on the Simply G Media Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, the Insightful Player Series. And every insightful player is just such a fantastic individual. And really, their passion to help kids, what a great partnership with the Total Tutor and the Total Education Network. And I'm with Danny Clark, and we're learning Danny's story. And now we're at the University of Illinois, the Fighting Illini. You get to the campus. Did you think you were going to be a pretty big-time player there, or were you still thinking, hey, the jury's still out on me? I have a lot of improvement to become who I want to be on the football field.
The jury was out on Danny, who Danny Clark was, because I arrived at campus as a 189-pound quarterback, which, played linebacker, which was not normal for any high school player. So I got there playing quarterback for about the first couple of days of training camp. And, it took about the third day or so when they asked me, we want you to try free safety. And I went to free safety. Still skinny. I redshirted that, and so I wasn't actually competing on the football field, but just in practice. And I became the special teams practice player of the year. And I, tore it up. I always was aggressive in my nature in football. So I went to the defensive side of the ball. I was super skinny, but after that second year, I went up to about 211 pounds, and there was a huge injury to one of my good friends, and allowed me to step in and play linebacker. In my redshirt freshman year. So, needless to say, I had no idea that I was anywhere close to a big-time college player, but I was trying to compete with a big-time linebacker in Ohio State. His name was, his name slips me, 45. I can't think of his name, but guys, he was a rookie of the year. And I tried to compete with all his numbers, and I did pretty well. I had better numbers than him, but he was on a winning team and played very well for his ball club. So I did not think I was going to be some, stellar college player, but I did try to hold my own as a freshman.
And so you were pretty good on the field. You had that motivation. But what about in the classroom? How was your experience at Illinois as a student?
When I arrived at the University of Illinois, my dream outside of football was to be an engineer to design cars. And so I signed up in the College of Engineering. It was extremely tough. Now, I remember all those grades. I remember that I had to keep C. I couldn't get a C in elementary, junior high, or high school. Well, my first semester at Illinois, I had a C and two D's. And I'll never forget how horrified I was. And I even attempted to change the grade so my dad wouldn't see it in my first semester. And, I'm just baffled at how I, did so poorly. And I really, what it amounted to is I rested on how aggressive I was, or I rested on my morals, or what I did in the past. I'm like, well, I was a good student in high school, so I should be a good student in college. And it was a total different ball game. I just really had to refocus myself on and understand that I have to really try. Not to say I didn't try in high school, but I have to study and put in the hours and put in the work to be a good student in college. So, you know, my next semester, of course, my grades shot up, and I was in, you know, B area, which I was more comfortable with than that first semester, just shot through me in shock. And so as a student, I went 4 years. I changed my major to speech communications, where I think that voted, you know, very well for me in the, you know, down the long run, because it was something that I was so fearful of. I was scared to speak in front of people, scared to stand up in front of large groups, and now it became a natural occurrence, and it was something that I was very, very comfortable with down the road.
And definitely that's interesting that you got involved in that at school. So we're going to go into that, I guess, life after football for sure. So we jump into specifically enough. You're a standout at Illinois. You're doing really well. Did you ever think that NFL teams would be coming calling on you? When did you finally see that was going to happen?
Well, as a junior, you know, in the classroom, I graduated with my speech communications degree in 4 years. So I went by redshirted, so I had 5 years of school. I graduated in 4 years with a speech comm degree, and then I attended graduate school in my fifth year. So in my junior year on the football field, I had a standout year, played really well, but we had some horrible teams in Illinois. So I was a good guy playing on a bad team, and it's nothing against my teammates. I have great teammates, great friendships and relationships, but we didn't play well at all. You know, I probably won all 13 games in my five years of college. So, so we had a rough spell on the football field. So I just felt like I was a really good player, but you know, the NFL was okay until I started hearing from agents, and that was going into my senior year. And they felt like, you know, you have an opportunity to be drafted next year. And so make sure that you do whatever you have to do to keep your nose clean. And I'm like, well, okay, I'll just embrace it, whatever. And so after my last season, we went to the first bowl game in my last season. We won 8 games. And so that tells you how many games we won in the first 5 of them. I think 5 games. So, yeah, so, you know, I think that, you know, going through that process and getting to my senior year where I'm hearing agents tell me that I'm going to drop it, well, I truly appreciate that. And, you know, now to speak about when and where I got drafted is the next topic or the next segment, and maybe this is a segue to it.
We're definitely going to the segue of it, Danny, and that's the nice thing of again, it's your radio station. You could choose where we're going on this, and basically now, Danny, it's now time to give us the story of specifically enough getting drafted in the NFL, the story of getting into the NFL, and kind of just summarizing in a few words after that about your career, because I really want to get into life after football.
Okay, that's cool. I'll give you a brief synopsis of what draft day or the drafting process would be. I call it the best and the worst day of my life. I was expected or I was predicted to be drafted in the second round. I was one of the most productive linebackers in the Big Ten that year. But I was projected to go in the second round, and then the draft was broken into 2 days. So there was the first 3 rounds on the first day and the last 4 rounds in the second day. Well, needless to say, I did not go in the second round or the third round, so I had a whole day to wait to see when I would get drafted. My family is going bananas, and people are calling my phone all day, which there was no cell phones then. So if you're taking things to call me, you got your friends down the street saying, hey, man, you get drafted? You know, so that was driving us crazy. We got more calls from friends than we got from them NFL teams. Fourth round went, fifth round went, sixth round went, and I didn't get picked to pick 245 in the seventh round of the 2000 draft. So while I was thankful that, you know, Tom Coughlin and his staff thought highly enough to pick me in the seventh round, I was so disappointed in the process, and I felt that I had a chip on my shoulder my entire career because of it. So, you know, I looked at it, seventh round, a guy is not given a lot of opportunities. you know, you got to basically climb your way in through the basement door of the National Football League and make your way, state your claim, and show that you still belong in that league. And that was my trek going into the league. I played, got drafted in Jacksonville. I played my first 4 years there. I went to play 2 years in Oakland. And while I was most productive of my career, Pro Bowl alternate and 130 tackles on average. And then I went down in 2006 and played in New Orleans for the Saints. I got the Hurricane Katrina. They went through Hurricane Katrina and reopened the dome on September 25th, 2006, which was my most memorable game by far. You know, the community just bonded together in such a way that it's something that I could never even imagine. But people had no places to go, but they came to a football game that essentially gave them life again and reopened a city wide open. So I played there in 2006, 2007. I played in Houston for the Texans. We had an 8-8 football season for Coach Kubiak. And then 2008 to 2009, I played for the New York Football Giants, which was my favorite place to play, favorite organization in all of football. Great experience, and they just won the Super Bowl in 2008. And I came right on the tail end of that thing and, you know, came in with an even better team after that Super Bowl season. But unfortunately, one of my teammates had an altercation in the club and harmed himself. And I think you probably can remember that.
Hey, Nick, because he's a Pittsburgh guy. I'm not going to go into that. Maybe we could talk off air on that one. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, we were 11-1 when that happened. And, of course, we finished the season 12-4. So that tells you how the rest of that year went. And then, you know, I came back. I signed to Texas once again in May 2010. And I ended up playing for the Saints. I signed to them. In September 2010, and I played my last season, started 11 games as a Sam linebacker for the New Orleans Saints, which was such a treat because they had just won the Super Bowl in 2009. So, again, there's two different situations where I came in the team missing the Super Bowl, but by no means did that define me. I had more than the amount of years that I expected, and the experiences, the platform of the NFL was grand. I can totally appreciate every snap, every play I've had in that league.
Wow, Danny. And like I said, I could just interview you on your career. So the way I want to go to this is really the most important thing on this show is to highlight what's the importance of being an insightful player. And I think that bringing the insightful player, being an insightful player, and what it means to you, and then also your life after football, they really connect in a lot of ways. So tell me what it means to be an insightful player of Coach Carew. What does that mean, Danny, to you?
I believe that, you know, to be an insightful player, you have to possess a unselfish personality or attitude about life. You feel like you should find this planet, or you should leave this planet, excuse me, in a better shape than you found it. And so when you have an idea or opportunity to embrace a group of kids or youth or even in people at your church, like, you just want to make sure that do you enhance that person's life or do you take away from it? And I think that was God's purpose in my life. And I had no idea of what the role of football played. Growing up, I just thought that was the big ticket. That was a big deal, you know. And as we spoke earlier, we said my dad knew that that was not the objective. But it was used as a platform to gain followers, in my opinion, to get people to look at, say, who is this Danny Clark kid and why? How did he make it to the highest level? He was not the strongest. He was not the fastest. But why did he ascend to these levels, to these extremes? And so I think that, you know, being a man of faith, I think that God had a plan for me to get in front of the masses and touch as many people as I can touch and guide them to a life of humility, a life of uplifting others, a life of faith. And that's the bottom line. I think that that's where I've become, that's where I'm comfortable, most comfortable speaking and sharing the word of God and being able to say, you know what, this is a better way to live. This is how to treat your neighbor. This is how to uplift your children. This is how to raise your children. And this is how to treat fellow man. So I think that's where my transition has been, becoming an insightful player, being in the NFL in my past. That was just one portion of my life. But by no means does that define who I am and where I'm going. I think that there's so much more to my story that lies ahead, and I can't wait for that check to unfold.
So you're using your prestige, your ability to be a superstar football player and have a fan following, and now you're going to make a difference in other people's lives. And you saw that from the Hurricane Katrina. I'd love to talk to you about that at one point in time. That experience alone changed you. Your father changed you in so many ways. Some of the humility that he taught you throughout your life. And then, okay, I am so blessed to have the opportunity to play football, but God had me play football for a reason, so I can make a difference in other people's lives. Then Insightful Player comes on your foundation as well. So tell us why you created the Danny Clark 55 Foundation as well.
Well, the Danny Clark Foundation was inspired by my second youngest son, Daniel Clark the Fifth. We call him Nicky. He was born on March 11, 2002. 1 pound, 13 ounces, 25 weeks gestation. He was barely in my left hand, man. It was just unbelievable to see, you know, and I didn't understand how God worked at that point. I was just like, man, just please take care of him. Keep him here and allow him to persevere through this madness. He's going through the toughest part of his life in the first 3 months of his life. I mean, just being in the incubator, all these machines hooked up to this small, fragile child, which, you know, his skin was basically see-through. And I mean, you could, like, see his organs underneath his skin. It was just like that thing, you know. And so, you know, I would watch his mother cry on a daily and see that. I watched the staff of that NICU unit that basically they stayed night and day looking after our child. But and I always commend them. We take the child back there to visit them. But more importantly, they did great, but I felt like there could be more support for the family, not only just the child.
Yes.
And so we started the Daniel Clark or the Danny Clark Foundation in light of Nicky, which it builds support around neonatal youth and their families, not just the children, but their families. And I felt like there was so much more that can be done to have a shoulder to cry on for the family and more support. So it started off as that being just catering to premature children. And I went to the board of the foundation. And I was like, you know what? This is what we're going to focus on. This is where our passion is. We have our Nicky, and he is at this point, he was 6 years old at the time.
Okay.
And healthy, not one ailment.
Yeah, great. That's fantastic.
He is right now, he's 11 years old. He'll be 12 in March. Fantastic kid, three-sport athlete, honor student, of course. And to me, it's just like that was God's way. I always call him my miracle baby because he's somebody that had all the odds against him. The doctor said he has 30% chance to live. And right now, he doesn't even know he had all these issues. So, you know, we spread it out. I went to the board, and they were like, you know, I feel like that is just a localized cause that we're working for.
Yes.
Why not reach out to all underserved young people and reach out to them and see if we can inspire them in some way, shape, or fashion? And that's why we reached out to underserved youth in every city that I've played in and in cities in between. I felt like anywhere we can help some people to inspire young people to be better and inspire them to give and treat other people better, that would be something that would go on for a lifetime. And I think that's where the Danny Clark Foundation came from.
That's a tremendous story, Danny. And to be involved in that foundation for sure and all these different things and to hear your story about the insightful player and you're definitely – definitely an insightful player after we've heard so much of what you're doing with the empowering youth and life after. Is there anything else? We have about 30 seconds about life after football and to find more information on you. There's so many stories to touch upon with you, Danny. One interview is not enough time for sure. And I thought we covered oodles and oodles of content in this time, but give us a last tidbit of basically life after football in 30 seconds for you, Danny.
Well, life after football for Danny Clark is I've taken on this concept of I put God into everything I think, say, and do. And I advise that for anyone that has any question about where they are, any doubt in their lives, go to God about it and basically have him direct your path. And secondly, you know, and I'm not a big social media guy, but I do have Twitter. If anyone wants to reach out to me for any questions, I'm at We Are Danny Clark. And that's the best way to get in contact with me. But importantly, I want you to have all attention on our Father. And that's my objective after playing football.
Well, I'll be tweeting this out to all the syndicated stations that air the show, Danny, and best of luck to you. And I really have to look at a lot of topics that we need to cover further to come back on the show, and I'll reach out to you for sure. I think the Hurricane Katrina story is a fantastic story. You have a lot of different things. I see a book in the future. You think about that, Danny, because there's a lot of areas that definitely you have a great story to tell. So it was great talking to you.
Absolutely. I really appreciate you, Neil.
All right. Take care, Danny. All right, bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Education Celebrity Show, powered by the Insightful Player Series, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook on the Simply G Media Network. You can go to simplygmedia.com to listen to all the shows and find out a lot of cool information. And I'm really excited. What I'm trying to do, I've been having tons of NFL players. The other sports, you know, it seems like reality stars, different people, but the NBA is a little harder. But I think that this guy really is going to be an interesting guy to talk to, especially what he's trying to do with Rebound Magazine. So I want to welcome the program, former NBA star Matt Fish. Matt, thanks for calling.
Hey, well, thank you so much. I appreciate you saying star.
Hey, you know, anyone that has a career, you can't last in the NBA unless you're a good player, for sure. You got to admit that. If you have a long career compared to the average career of an NBA player, and some of them that, you know, consider them the greatest players all in college, and they get to the pros and they can't last. So you at least found your niche there, didn't you?
Well, yeah, I tell you, it doesn't hurt being 6'11 and left-handed and a go-getter, so.
And it has to be, because a lot of times I've talked to different players that you gotta take that role when you get to the NBA. You might have been a big superstar in college, and then you have to change the way you play for that team and hopefully stay with that team for a certain amount of time, so that you constantly need more than just five players to be a successful NBA team.
Well, there's no doubt about it. This world needs role players, and I definitely knew my role as a player.
Okay, so let's talk about it, Matt. Being 6'11", did you always think you wanted to be an NBA player when you grew up, when you were a kid?
No, not at all. Actually, I came from small town Iowa, Washington, Iowa, a town of 6,000 in southeastern Iowa. And, you know, back in the 80s, we did everything. You know, you went out for all the sports, and you went out for all the different events that you could do. And so I was in chorus and choir and band and High Five, which was a singing group. And I had 10 years of piano lessons under my belt. I grew up to be about 6'8", and the people around me seeing me carry the great big tri-toms and the marching band was like, why aren't you going out for basketball? Between my junior and senior year in high school, a buddy of mine who was playing varsity basketball as a freshman talked me into going to a camp. So I went out to Northern Kentucky University to a five-star blue-chip camp and played basketball. I guess I played well enough to start receiving a few letters of you know, interest in playing basketball at the next level. And it wasn't anything too fantastic, but heck, I just filled them all out and sent them all back.
And the difference is at 6'11", at that time when you were playing, there weren't many 6'11", 6'9", type players. And it's interesting that you didn't have a background in basketball to be able to do this. And so you must have been pretty coordinated then. Or did you develop the coordination? Because I'm 6'10". And I made the mistake of never really getting as coordinated until I became a professional wrestler. So I didn't have a great huge college career, lasted 1 year, but that you must have had some good role models that said, hey, you got that body, let's teach you how to play.
And that's what it is. You can't teach somebody to be so tall. I fill out all that information, send it back, and 10 days later they gave me a phone call from the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, saying they're offering me a full-ride scholarship. And I'm like, in what? And they're like, basketball. And I'm like, well, okay. So I come from a place where there's oceans of corn. So I go down there to Wilmington, which is really 2 miles from the ocean. They put me right on the beach, and there's an actually true ocean. So I'm like, well, what do I sign? So I signed a Division I scholarship before I ever started a varsity game in high school.
That's amazing. So your high school career was did you even play much, or were kind of explain that to us? So that you were discovered on the band, did you play any organized ball?
No. My junior year, I played some junior varsity, and I was uncoordinated. And we had a very successful senior squad ahead of me. They went 25-0. They went undefeated. They didn't lose a game. So I stepped in my senior year with already a scholarship under my belt, which was rare. And the head coach almost had to play me. And he did so. And we went 20-5 my senior year, and we got third in state. And I did set a record for rebounds at my high school that still holds. And I don't know, it kind of went on from there. I went on to college after that.
So that's, I don't think there's many NBA players that have a story that I played pretty much just 1 year of organized basketball before going to college. So when you got there to UNC Wilmington, were you coordinated at that point in time, or were you a big-time project for this university?
You know, I was a project. I didn't even really understand what it took. And so they brought me in there early in August, and they started working me out hardcore. And I realized that if I took it to the rack, or if I took the ball hard, this hard, it might not work. I'm going to have to take it this much more harder to the basket. So I learned, and I quickly learned. I mean, I'm a student. So I learned, and I learned, and I learned at a high level. So I didn't have really bad habits. I didn't take the ball down too low so that it was the height of the guard, and keep the ball high, and my footwork was pretty good, you know, and I was in some dancing stuff in high school too, so my footwork wasn't too bad, you know, and I had a really good coach, so that helps too.
A good coach that can coach big men, because we, as we know, Matt, if you don't have a good big man coach, you're not going to be successful playing in this game, because there's so many nuances to playing that post position.
I didn't even realize how good of a coach I had my junior and senior year is Kevin Eastman. Now, Kevin Eastman is a top assistant now for the Los Angeles Clippers. So he's a heck of a coach, and he's gotten to the pro ranks. And now I realize after the fact of how good of a coach he is.
And that definitely, and you were very successful at UNC Wilmington. After you started learning how to play the game, you did pretty good to get NBA interest, didn't you?
Yeah, and even my senior year in college, I didn't think that I was going to really play at the next level. I just did what I was supposed to do. And I ended up getting first team all conference, and I got 20 points and 10 rebounds, and got the MVP, and got the Thomas V. Mosley Most Outstanding Athlete at the university. So out of all sports, I got the number one honor you could get. And next thing you know, I get drafted to the NBA.
And so that's interesting. Even in your senior year, you're saying, okay, and I could see that, especially sports not being your huge thing, academics were very important for you in college as well, because you had to come up with a game plan afterwards, not thinking, hey, I'm going to make a living in this sport.
Yeah, I knew I certainly wanted to get my degree. You know, I just didn't think that playing basketball was going to be my forte even after college. And, you know, kind of sort of fell in my lap, and I kind of feel sorry or feel guilty sometimes when some people, you know, their whole lives are just, I want to make it to the, you know, college, I want to make it to the pros, and it kind of fell into my lap.
And it seems like that always happens with big guys, because of the big guys, you can't grow them on trees, even though we're seeing bigger and bigger and bigger guys every 10 years. And there's more and more 6'10", 6'11", sometimes. And now we're hearing 7'4". But at that time, a little different story. So, and then you said left-handed, that's another key component. So once you graduated from UNC Wilmington, you got drafted by whom?
I got drafted to the Golden State Warriors. I was a second-round draft pick. Latrell Sprewell was the first-round draft pick to the Golden State Warriors.
Oh, yeah, I was a big fan of Spree, especially with that Golden State team. So you played under Don Nelson as well, Matt?
Yeah, I did. You know what? They wanted me to go overseas. I went over there. It didn't work out. I came back, kind of pressed the envelope. They said, hey, no room in the end. So they sent me on my journey to the CBA. But later in life, Don Nelson called me up to the New York Knicks.
Oh, wow. So basically, you played how many years in the NBA? So you went to Golden State, and where did you go after that? To the CBA?
Yeah, I was a CBA guy. You know what? I played 10 years pro ball. I ended up getting 3 in the NBA. I had 5 in the CBA. I won a championship in the CBA. I was an all-star player in the CBA. I was the number one center every year there. And I kept getting that wonderful taste of coffee going to the next level, and my, it tasted good.
And then right when your career was over, you said you made one more trip to the NBA then, correct?
Yes, I was in and out, back and forth. I played a little bit overseas when it got later in my career, knowing that the writing was on the wall, chances of getting back probably weren't there. So I went and played in places like China against Yao Ming and played over in Poland for a little bit in Warsaw, you know, and wherever I could get a job. And then I ended up getting back to an ABA team here in the United States, really kind of really frustrated, you know, and I just got really fed up. I just basically was frustrated with my career and walked away. And then kind of here comes depression. You know, what do I do now? You know, so I went through all that like a lot of former players do. And so, that was something to deal with as well.
Yeah, definitely. And through that process, again, because you started to really – basketball became such a part of your life compared to what it was before, and then what do I do after basketball? Because you got to travel the world, you got to play against the amazing players, you got to do all these different things, and then bam, it's time for a new career. And that's hard, right? Life after for a professional athlete.
Yeah, man. It happens to all of us, and I didn't realize I was one of these guys who, I'll play forever, and, you know, I just had that mentality of you know, it's not going to happen to me, and then I'm out, and no longer on the pedestal, and no longer, you know, the crowds are quiet, and, you know, you're really looking for something to fulfill your life, you know, you're just kind of lost, and just kind of, what do I do now, and, you know, so I tried to do several different things, and some didn't work out, and some did. So I knew this much, education was important, and I went back and got my education furthered, so that helped.
Okay, tell us, our audience, a little bit about that. Where did you, after your degree at UNC Wilmington, where'd you go then?
Well, you know, I had a degree in communications, so I had a bachelor in communications there at UNC Wilmington. Then after 10 years of pro basketball, I went back to the University of Phoenix, got a master's in business, also earned a master's in education, and then got a bachelor's, and I'm highly qualified in special education.
Oh, wow, so you're a teacher just like myself. That's pretty interesting. So once this your career's over and you get these different degrees, what types of jobs have you had since life after basketball?
Well, I started working with Patterson Sports Venture. Steve Patterson, who passed away, was a former NBA player. He was out in the community making a difference. So I was a character coach. And I created a curriculum that taught character through the character code, which were words from John Wooden's Pyramid of Success. So we marketed it through the ASU women's basketball team. When I go around and put on assemblies for 3rd to 6th graders all around the Valley of the Sun, which I live here in Phoenix, Arizona. So that was one thing I did. Then I went on to life skills, self-contained special education, and did that for 3 years, in where the students taught me much more than I taught them.
You were the world's tallest teacher, right?
Yeah, so it's so funny. They a lot of the people in my classroom didn't have a father figure, and I felt like I filled that role. And being, quote-unquote, bigger than life, I think helped in that realm.
Quite interesting. I thought I was the world's largest teacher. Now I find out you were. So, it's so interesting the kind of difference you can make in the classroom. But going through these life experiences of helping others and doing things, that leads you even more? Is it always kind of like because you were stuck into a professional career and constantly going from one team to the other, traveling, different things, then you finally are trying to figure out who you are? How did you find out this is what Matt really wants to do? This is what Matt Fish wants to do. You did some of the special ed teaching. You did some of these curriculums. You're involved in the education thing. Then what led you into the next path in your life?
Well, I enjoyed teaching and giving back, and I really liked doing what I did. And my mother and my grandmother and my sister are all teachers and have taught throughout their career. So teaching, I know how to do. But I know I also felt a bit limited in the classroom, reaching my 15 to 20 students. And I really wanted to put it on a level of, let's see how we can help on a grander scale. So, you know, that was my next goal then, is how can I make a bigger difference? How can I mentor? How can I teach? How can I help? How can I assist? And so that's what's kind of led me into the next career.
And so let's talk about that, and then we're going to take a quick break. So where are you at that? Your next career is, we're going to talk about Rebound Magazine, but involving education, where did you go?
Well, as far as education is concerned, I'm going through a program right now, a founding program through a company that is a transition helping athletes and Olympians, former pro athletes and Olympians. And so I'm going through a process of learning how they mentor. And I look forward to completing that process and then having a caseload of former pro athletes and Olympians and mentoring them.
Wow. So a coach in certain ways. So when we get back, I'm learning so much about Matt now. First of all, thinking, okay, we're going to talk about Rebound Magazine and we're just going to talk about this career in the NBA and everything. But you really have some of the things I have in a way, because again, a former professional athlete, not to the level that you were, but I became an educator and saw that that's my passion to help others. And through that passion led me to different things and then led me back to work kind of where I was at the beginning before an educator. So it's a very strange path that in life's lessons and how we learn to teach others. So I'm talking to Matt Fish, former NBA player, owner of Rebound Magazine, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show and the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor. Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Also on the Simply G Media Network, SimplyG.com. And I'm with Matt Fish, and I didn't know this, and Harvey didn't tell me all about this, and this is the interesting thing, that you are an educator, you're a teacher, and then looking at mentoring former athletes and Olympians, and I think that that's definitely a missing thing, because you had that hole in your heart when you decided to give it up. How am I going to transition? And when you hear the horror stories of Olympians and athlete and professional athletes that blow everything and never use what they did on the floor or in the pool or wherever and take it to the next level in life and to be able to be good members of society and successful, you saw that there was definitely something to fill out there, that was something that people needed.
Well, there's no doubt a need, and I foresaw that. The worst thing to do would be to go through life and not learn from, you know, what you've gone through yourself. And I truly went through, you know, a couple, 3 years of depression, and had never even heard of an organization called the National Basketball Retired Players Association, but got involved with them, got so involved that now I'm the president of the Phoenix chapter. It's a 501c3 where we go out and make a difference in the community, as well as transitioning athletes from the days of the ball bouncing into the days where they're no longer bouncing.
That's really, really cool. And then, so the mentorship thing, is that the newest thing where you're working with athletes, Olympians? That's about to start, right?
Yes, but it's always been something that I've been trying to figure out, what's the best organization to go with, you know, and I've gotten on board with Rembrandt Sports, and that's Trilogy, so it's an offset of Rembrandt Sports, and they're looking for founding members, and the founding members that go through this program and help them, that you would have to be a successful former professional athlete, you know, then now I'm learning their system as I go through to find how to help those that are in need of transition, help with programs, help with systems, help with you know, sending them in the direction where they can, they're wherever they need help, you know. So again, I'm just learning it. I have another call on Thursday, you know, so I'm going through the process, but I know worst case scenario, at least will help me. You know, so I also want to promote them through Rebound Magazine.
Oh, and so definite good transition, Matt, but I have more questions. As you can see, I'm the definite follow-up question kind of person, because I definitely want to help you in that path. And if any of your athletes that you work with want to share, they're welcome to come on the show. Because, again, I do work with an NFL group called Insightful Player that has players that have gone through something like you've gone through, Matt, in the NBA, is kind of life after sports, or going through hardships or difficulties and transitioning and being successful in life, you know, through alcoholism, all these things. It's really sad to see and to hear about these stories about people that blew it all. There was a conversation on a sports radio show today saying that a lot of these professional athletes, they're broke after they leave 5 years later, and that the money's much better than it was when we're talking about some of those athletes in the 70s and 80s. And you're like, why? What happens to them? Why can't they transition their lives off the court or off the field? What do you think the reason is? You went through this.
Well, I didn't make millions of dollars, so I didn't have it to lose. But at the same time, you know, there are many out there that I've seen around me do just that. And I think a lot of it has to do with just there's a lack of financial literacy. When I was teaching special education, I would teach them the simpleness of, you know, budgeting and whatever else have you. And I'm thinking, not only do the kids, you know, that I'm teaching need this, every student in high school needs this. Hold up. Every single person, every athlete especially, who can be taken advantage of, who doesn't know money, needs to learn the basics and the fundamentals of money and franchising and the people around you and surrounding yourself with good people. And that's just part of it. They just, you know, you roll on this high. You have your posse with you around you. You know, they bring you down a path of, well, this looks like a lot more fun than that, so let's do this. You know, your decisions just aren't made the right way. So it's a matter of, you know, really getting to them younger is the way I see it, and really teach them at a younger age, and then really, you know, taking the generation gaps and really trying to, you know, try to figure out a way to, how do we connect all these people? You know, we've got those that know, like my age and older. They're mentoring me, and I'm mentoring younger. I'm in my mid-40s. So, you know, it goes all the way down to junior high, and, you know, there's just even lower, you know, or younger. So it really needs to start, and it starts, I think, all the way through, but you need to get them younger. But I know people my age have a lot to teach those that are younger than I, because, you know, we've been there, and we've seen it happen around us. So it's a matter of giving back.
That's so true, and giving back, and to see how you can help others through your mistakes and your difficulties and so many things. And I think that, again, we have to look at all these professional athletes and say there has to be someone to mentor them afterwards, because we see successful NFL players that go through this route, but yet they might go through it, but yet we don't know how the rest of their lives are in turmoil. They might get a job as a play-by-play guy, or, you know, a color commentator, or they might cover a certain thing, but we don't know what their life skills are about. You know, making half the money they're making, or what, you know, the relationships with their wife or girlfriend, or relationships with their children. These things are so important, and a lot of times you're constantly traveling. Matt, the NBA and all those leagues were so much travel that you're away from your family and friends and everybody, that once you get back to, hey, I'm here on a daily basis, it's hard. It's got to be challenging.
You know, I always equate it. Here I am, you know, traveling around China or traveling around the United States, or, you know, you're going to these great places, and all of a sudden, you know, it all kind of ends, and you find yourself at home cleaning the cat box. And you're like, what happened?
Yes.
You know, it just kind of hits you upside the head, you know. But if you're grounded, like I feel like I am, being from, you know, Iowa, I'm really happy with the way I grew up. You know, I have a great family. I have a great support system around me. So, you know, I have a lot more than others might not. So what do I do? Well, then I have to find a way to give back to those who don't have what I have. You know, so that's just really my sole purpose right now.
Okay, so why Rebound Magazine? And I guess now I'm understanding what Rebound Magazine is based on your story. You know, because I checked it out and saw, oh, yeah, you're interviewing former NBA players and current NBA players and all these different things. But Rebound is more a way of life, in a way, from difficulty. So the people that you're talking to in your magazine have had challenges in their lives then, for sure.
Well, I know that I've created Rebound with the idea that it can be a resource for the players to go to and find, you know, where they can go to and find help. So really, it's a place to accumulate all of the different opportunities and things that are out there to help you in the various needs that you will have. I'm ramping up my website right now, so it can be a place to go as well. I'm also, since I have created this stage to get the stories of the former NBA players, ABA players, Harlem Globetrotter players, and we've just added the WNBA players, I'm putting together a Rebound internet TV show where they can come and tell their story, tell their journey, promote what they're doing, and mentor those who are younger than them. So that is the next step to my endeavors.
Well, Matt, it's kind of like I met the person in NBA is I met Chrissy Carew, the insightful player with the NFL. You're doing exactly the same thing in a different area and format, and I hope that my radio network can be a great way to promote it as well through all my syndication, to have some of these athletes on with you, and we could talk to them about those, so you have another platform as well to get the word out for what you're doing, because it's tremendous.
Well, thank you, Neil, and it's a labor of love. You know, I'm not getting paid well at all now. I just put all my efforts into it. And my wife, thank goodness, is a director for United Healthcare. She's looking down her nose at me going, when are you going to do something?